guess I'm in another in-depth day. I'm going to look at now a new study that just came out from the University of Hawaii, considering the thoughts on the sixth mass extinction of global diversity. Is it really in progress? Is it cause of the Anthropocene or the us? It's the people era for the world, and it seems that we are certainly part of the problem. The history of life on Earth has been marked five times by events of mass biodiversity extinction, caused by extreme natural phenomena always in the past. Today, many experts warn that a sixth mass extinction crisis is underway. This time, unfortunately, folks, it's entirely caused by our human activities. This new study showed a comprehensive assessment of evidence of this ongoing extinction event was published recently in the journal Biological Reviews by biologists from the University of Hawaii and the Museum of Natural History in Paris. Drastically increased rates of species extinction and declining abundances of many animal and plant populations are well documented. Yet some still deny that these phenomena amount to mass extinction. This is according to Robert Cowrie, lead author of the study and research professor at the Minoan Pacific Biosciences Research Center and School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology. What a name. This denial is based on a view of the crisis which focuses on mammals and birds and ignores, at least for now, invertebrates, which of course constitute by far the great majority of our biodiversity. By extrapolating from estimates obtained from land snails and slugs in a number of other places, Cowie and the co-authors estimated that since the year 1500, Earth could already have lost between 7 and 13% of the 2 million known species on Earth. Incidentally, folks, that doesn't sound like a lot. 10, 13%? That's 150,000 to over 260,000 species that have already been eliminated, many of which we probably never even got to study. Including invertebrates was key to confirming that we indeed witnessed the onset of the sixth mass extinction in Earth's history, said Cowie. The situation is not the same everywhere, however. Although marine species face significant threats, there's no evidence that the crisis is affecting the oceans to the same extent as it is on land. On land, island species such as those from the Hawaiian Islands, where this study was started, are much more affected than continental species, and the rate of extinction of plants seems lower than that of terrestrial animals at this point. Unfortunately, along with science denial taking a foothold in modern society these days, we've been through that on a range of issues, the new study points out that some people also deny that the sixth extinction has even ever begun. Additionally, others accept it as a new and natural evolutionary trajectory, as humans are just another species playing their natural role in the history of our Earth, albeit on a much faster basis. Some even consider the biodiversity should be manipulated solely for the benefit of humanity, nothing to do with the benefits defined by whom? Somebody else? Folks, this world ticks the way it ticks because it works the way it works. We can't keep jerking it around. It's just not going to pay off. Here I've got to say, folks, we humans, we are the only species capable of manipulating the biosphere on such a large scale. I've tried to say this a lot of ways, try once more. We are not just another species evolving in the face of external influences. In contrast, we're the only species that has the conscious choice regarding our future and that of our Earth's biodiversity. No other animal can even approach those thoughts. To fight the crisis, various conservation initiatives have been successful for certain charismatic animals. But these initiatives cannot target all species, and they cannot reverse the overall trend of species extinction. Nonetheless, it is essential to continue such efforts, to continue to cultivate a wonder for nature, and to document biodiversity, hopefully, before it disappears. Despite the rhetoric about the gravity of this crisis, and although remedial solutions exist and are brought to the attention of decision makers all the time, it is clear that political will is lacking. Denying the crisis, accepting it without reacting, or even encouraging it constitutes an abrogation of humanity's common responsibilities and paves the way for Earth to continue on its sad trajectory towards a sixth mass extinction, of which we are the biggest part of the problem. Why don't we make an effort to become the biggest part of the solution? While we're contemplating our little world, I may as well just throw all of this at you at once. Let's talk about literally the all-time hottest day we know of. Last year saw record high temperatures in many places around the world, and this year started out with more of the same. In mid-January, Onslow, a small town in Western Australia, measured a high temperature of 123.3 degrees, the all-time highest temperature ever recorded anywhere in the Southern Hemisphere. The previous reading was also made in Australia back in 1960. It was almost the same, 123.2. The newest temperature record was just set as climate institutions around the world were announcing that the past 7 years have been the highest in recorded history. The list of temperature records set in 2020 and 2021 is a long one. 2020 was the hottest year in recorded history. July 2021 was the hottest month ever recorded. The hottest official temperature ever recorded anywhere in the world was 129.9 degrees, basically 130 degrees, folks, in Death Valley, California, August 16th, 2020, and then repeated again last year on July 9th, 2021. Never before was it ever that hot, even in Death Valley. The hottest temperature, incidentally, ever recorded in the Arctic. 100 degrees now in the Arctic, thinking about 100.4 degrees was on June 20th of 2020. Amazingly, that small town also holds the record for the coldest temperature ever recorded in Asia at minus 90 degrees. Think about that. 2021 saw an all-time high temperature record in Europe, in Syracuse, in Sicily, on August 11th at 119.8 degrees in all three places. Overall, 400 documented weather stations and communities or outposts around the world established all-time temperature records in 2021 alone. The climate we have lived through over the past decades is changing, and these changes will have consequences to our way of life and certainly to the way of life of those that come after us. Let's begin my gardening section here, and I'm going to do just a few minutes on how to become, eventually I hope, and I always strive for it, a zero-waste gardener. When we talk about zero waste, many people zero straight in on recycling, but recycling alone is just not enough. In fact, recycling is one of the last of the zero-waste steps that we can take to reduce waste and become more sustainable in our homes and gardens. Before recycling, we should think that the four other R's do exist: refuse, reduce, reuse, repair. So consider these in addition to recycle. Here's some tips to help you kind of move beyond the basics and get to close to zero waste, at least in your garden, as possible. Let's begin with refuse. Let's refuse to contribute to damaging systems. Each and everything we buy and consume comes at some kind of cost. But we can significantly reduce our personal impact by thinking carefully about what we buy and bring into our homes and especially into our gardens. As gardeners, we may inadvertently contribute to the damaging systems. I'm certainly guilty of it sometimes for sure. This happens, for example, when you choose items which contain, for instance, single-use plastic. And when we use plastic as a temporary solution where other, more eco-friendly materials would probably work better. But we can refuse to buy seeds in plastic or plants in plastic pots. Instead, collecting our own seeds, propagating our own plants from divisions or cuttings, or choosing to buy from suppliers whose package is a more sustainable way of doing business. And we can find different solutions for a range of plastic gardening products if we'll just stop and think about it. There's a chance that you use peat in your garden, which contributes to the destruction, incidentally, of the peat bogs. There's better things. Laying waste to these precious carbon sinks and biodiversity hotspots leads to a really different but equally problematic type of waste. But we can refuse peat compost and peat-based potting mixes and instead choose a peat-free alternative for containers. Alternatively, we can make our own compost. Really good idea. As gardeners, we should also all refuse to use any synthetic pesticides, herbicides, or fertilizers. Instead, we can take an entirely organic and natural integrated approach, which I'd be glad to help you with. Knowing what to say no to is one of the first steps in becoming a truly zero-waste gardener. The second R we'll give a minute is reuse. Even when we cannot source natural materials to use in the creation maintenance of our gardens, we still should not rush out and buy something new. We can embrace second-handed items and reclaim materials and make use of household waste, such as toilet tube rolls or packaging or cardboard, for example. Options for reuse, upcycling, and innovation in a garden are almost really endless if you start thinking about them. We just have to look around at what is available and use our imaginations to keep items out of the waste stream. Avoid the cycle of excessive consumption by keeping the items we already have in use as long as possible. And as a little quick note here, folks, think about repairing items. Every year I see people buy all new gardening tools when a little bit of work on the existing ones would be just fine. So one of the R's that fits in here is repair whenever possible. And instead of just thinking about recycling resources, things that we have, think about recycling the nutrients in your garden. Recycling is important. At home, as well as through municipal schemes, we should all be, in essence, composting food waste and other biodegradable materials in our gardens, mulching as much as possible, chopping and dropping, making organic liquid plant foods, which I do a lot, to recycle nutrients and create a closed-loop system in our spaces. We should also think about recycling in terms of water cycle, replenishing groundwater sources and taking a long view by using water in our gardens wisely and well. Remember, you can also collect a lot of water out there pretty inexpensively, folks. That's another subject. Just remember, plastic and food waste are key issues, but they are not the only ones. And being a truly zero-waste gardener goes far beyond just recycling. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.